Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, and you're listening to Try Alive here on Blog Talk Radio. I am joined by my co-host. Her name is Casey Randall, calling in from a very chilly Anchorage this morning. Casey, how's it going?
It's going well, Robert. How are you doing?
Things are good up here. We have about a foot of snow. It's about negative 15 right now. How's it in your neck of the woods?
Well, you're a little colder than us. I just looked at our thermometer and it said 1.4, but it's nice to have winter back. I hope it stays this way for many months.
I do too. You know, we have been off the air for a couple of weeks. I was traveling to Seattle last week, and I know things get busy around the holidays for everybody. What's been happening over at your house?
Well, it was great. I think on the last show I talked about having my parents in town. They flew up from Michigan, so we had them here for Thanksgiving and early Christmas, and they just left a few days ago. So now it seems quiet around the house. It was wonderful to have family here.
It is. It's great to be able to entertain folks from the outside. We talked on their last show about places to go and places to see, and we talked about you definitely have to check out some of the attractions here in our little town of Anchorage, one being Moose's Tooth Pizza. Maybe we should ask them for a sponsorship. What do you think?
Yeah, I know. We're giving them some good advertisement, right? But they're good. Moose's Tooth is just, it's always a hit whenever you go there. Great pizza and salads and everything else.
Exactly. All right, so today we're going to talk about a product that is developed by a local running store here called the Tuesday Night Race Series, and we're going to jump into that. I think it's a very cool concept. I'm sure they do this around other parts of the country, but you've taken part in some of this, haven't you?
Yeah, we've done the Tuesday Night Races for quite a few years. Before we had children, my husband and I did it, and we ran in we'll talk about there's a few different leagues. They have three of them, but we did it. And then once we had kids, it was really fun to get the kids involved in doing it too.
So can you kind of describe the concept and how it's sort of laid out and why so many people think it's such a fun thing to do?
Well, it goes on for 2 months, September and October. And then I think sometimes it dips into the beginning of November, but it's just a community gathering of people who want to come run, and they have three leagues. They have one called the Munchkin League, which is for kids and kids at heart, so anybody can run it. It's a shorter distance. Let's see, I have the distances here. It's usually between a 1 and 3K for the Munchkin League, and then they do the Farm League, which is between 3 and 10K, and then they have a Lightning League, which is between 4 and 12K, and you don't know what the course is before you show up. You just show up at the time that it's going to start, and they give you a little rundown of each course, and then they start each of the leagues off at a different time, you know, just within a few minutes of each other, and everybody just runs and has a good time.
You know, I think some people that are listening are sitting there in their seats thinking about running and having a good time. I don't know if those necessarily go hand in hand. What do you say about that? Can running be fun?
Well, I think it can be a great time. I think that anyone who has started running or been running for years definitely knows moments where they've been running and not having a great time. But these particular races are all about fun, and since they have the three different leagues, you know, you can pick how competitive you want to be or how far of distance you want to run. And especially when you see the families out there with, I mean, these teeny kids that can barely walk, and parents are carrying them half the way. Some are in jogging strollers. Some people are carrying them on their fronts or their backs. And the kids, oh my gosh, some of them are running the wrong way, but they're out there doing it. And I think that's the race there is out of the three of them.
You know, I agree. And, you know, I think it's a great way to keep the family involved and get them off the couch and onto the street, so to speak, so they can get out there and enjoy what Anchorage has to offer. And if we could, Casey, I would like to switch over a little bit to a different topic, but sort of on the same vein. My wife, Michelle, I know you know Michelle, she is in a PE class at the University of Anchorage, and she just recently wrote a paper called Running on Empty, and it's about how physical education classes are no longer a requirement in the school districts up here in Alaska. I remember when I was in school, and I'm quite a bit older than you are, I think, but we were required to go to PE for, I believe, all 12 years of public school. And now I believe it's only a requirement just for a couple of years, maybe in each school, you know, elementary, middle, and high school. Let's talk about this a little bit, because I think it kind of goes into the topic with the Tuesday night series about getting out and getting active. What are your thoughts about sort of the physical education in schools today?
Well, when I went to school, just as you, I remember we had PE all the way through. I can't remember, you know, in high school if we were required. I think you were required to take a certain amount. I always took it. I mean, we grew up a very active, playing lots of sports in our family. We didn't really have a choice, which was great. I mean, I'm glad our parents just put us right in there and taught us all the things they did. But, of course, I think it's great to be active. And, you know, I homeschool my children, and we're very active, so I actually don't know what those requirements are in the local schools today.
Right. You know, without you know, having kids in school, I think it is difficult to know what they expect. But just think about society in general, about how our kids, not necessarily mine and yours, but as a society, our kids are much less active today than they were 15 or even 20 years ago. Don't you agree?
Right. Yeah, I think so, for sure. And I think that's, you know, one of the, there's lots of different campaigns around the country to get kids out and, you know, with the 60 minutes of play a day, or we have one here in Alaska called Healthy Futures, which actually is connected to the Tuesday night races, because the Tuesday night races, the name now is the Bonnie Sosa Tuesday night races. And Bonnie Sosa, she passed away, I think it was 2008. And she was the founder of Healthy Futures. And that was pushed through the schools to get kids active, a lot of running events. And now they've expanded it, and it's connected to the Alaska Sports Hall of Fame. And it's a great program. But that was, you know, to get kids active, and then they could earn little medals, little prizes for being active. They would log it and turn it in. And I actually worked for Healthy Futures for a couple years, so that was a great thing to be part of.
So how can we change the minds of our kids today? You know, they would much rather sit in front of their PlayStations and their Xboxes and the TV and, you know, that sort of stuff, and get their entertainment from there. Especially in Alaska, it could be difficult, but it's also sort of unique, because you'll see kids outside on the playground when it's freezing outside compared to most of the country, and they're out there, you know, playing and having a good time at recess. But I still think that a lot of kids would much prefer, you know, to sit in front of the TV and kind of veg out. Do you agree?
Right. Well, and I think that goes back to what we've talked about before, and how important it is to model that behavior. And as parents, I mean, being a parent myself, and as you, I mean, you know that if you're interested in something and you're very involved with your children, oftentimes they are interested too. So if you're doing activities outside, you're showing that exercise is an important thing to be done every day. It seems like kids often will want to follow.
Right. I totally agree. And one last question to you, Casey. I know we didn't talk about this before air, but I just happened to edit her paper last night, and I thought it was a good topic to jump in on. What is your opinion on the differences between exercise and sport? Where do you see the connections, and where do you see the differences in terms of kids, I guess?
Right. Well, you know, I mean, I grew up playing all sorts of sports. We always had a ball in our hand. We were always in the gym. My dad was a coach. So I just thought everybody grew up that way. I realize now I was lucky to have that. And with my own children, they're not involved in many organized sports right now. My dad probably would love them to be, but we do a lot of, they get lots of exercise. So, you know, I think both are great. I think sports, if you're part of a team You learn how to work as a team. You learn how to be a leader. You learn how to step back and play your role. So I think organized sports are great. I also think learning to just have exercise as a value in your life that you're going to put first is important.
You know, I totally agree with you. My dad, he was a Marine. He also played college football, and you know, sports were a big part of our lives. I remember starting football at about 6 years old. Then I started hockey and lacrosse and played baseball and everything else. And you know, our whole lives in our family was revolved around physical activity and sports all the way through high school and my first round of college. I played a lot of intramural sports because I think that is a very important part of a kid's upbringing. And, you know, as you know, with us over here as mushers, you know, sports are part of our daily life. We do it as a lifestyle. And I think that, you know, that not only helps us physically, but it also keeps our family much more bonded than if mom and dad are out doing something, the kids are doing something else.
Right. And, you know, through sports, you learn how to win, you learn how to lose, you learn how to be gracious and be a good sport, you know, through all of that.
Right.
So I think it's great. And also, you know, exercise, some people prefer to exercise alone, which is great. And if you can motivate yourself to do that, then that's awesome. Sometimes we need other people to help inspire us. And if you're part of a group fitness or part of a team, then you have this obligation. You know, feel like you need to go do it. We need that kick in the butt sometimes.
You know, I totally agree. And let's switch over a little bit to that inspiration, because that's what your Be Alive campaign is all about. That's the message you're trying to promote. But how would you go about motivating some of your friends or acquaintances that would like to be more active, and then they look to you as that role model, but they aren't quite sure what they're supposed to do? Often you'll find, especially as we age, we become much less motivated to start something new, I guess, and we become a little bit more fearful of our limitations, don't we?
Right. Well, and trying new things is always scary. I mean, it's exciting and scary. And, you know, I remember years ago, before we had children, and my husband and I hike a lot, and we still do that with our kids. We were hiking all weekend, and it was great out there. But we ran a group called Peak a Week. And that's exactly what it was. We climbed as a group. I organized, and we went up a different peak each week, just here in the local Chugach Mountains. And it was amazing to me of how many people came who they were so grateful for coming to the group. And I was thinking, wow, they really enjoy coming to this, you know, but they can just go off and hike by themselves. But it was that they didn't know where to go. They didn't know who to go with. Maybe they were afraid of bears, or which, you know, you need to respect the wildlife and all that. But it was really fun, and it was neat to see how many people from that group now just they kept continuing hiking, and they've gone on and hiked all over the world. And it's just neat to think, wow, you know, we started that group, and you got some confidence. And I think that happens for a lot of people when they push themselves to try something new.
And it is. If you do have a group of like-minded people that want to do an activity, it's a little bit easier to get your feet wet, so to speak. So how did you mold your group in terms of speed and distance and, you know, activity level, that sort of thing? Did you tailor it to the fastest, to the slowest, or somebody in between? How did you make sure everybody had an enjoyable experience on both sides of it, fast and slow?
Right. Well, and that was the whole thing. I just wanted to share something that I loved and make it fun, you know, for everyone who showed up. So usually for myself, I would kind of go back and forth throughout the group as people were hiking. We encouraged, hey, make sure you're going to hike with somebody or bring a friend, you know, because some people were faster and other people wanted to go slower. We generally, you know, when we get to the top, we wait for everybody to get there. It was just a good mix of people. One time we had someone show up, and we were hiking and about halfway up the mountain, and she told me she was scared of heights. And I was like, oh, my goodness, you know, we do go up every time. So, you know, you learn things as you run that kind of activity. But I would always put out an email. This was before Facebook and all that. but I would put out an email with the time that it started, the distance of the hike, you know, some tips on what gear to bring. A lot of times we would scout out the trail beforehand so we could even give a trail condition for people. I had more time back then, you know. Once you have kids, you get a little busier. But it was really fun, and the group, it was a bunch of friends at first, and then, it, you know, word got out and it started growing, and we did that for quite a few years and met a lot of wonderful people doing it.
You know, Casey, I'm learning so much about you just here on the show, about all the stuff that you've organized and done. You said you worked at the Healthy Futures. You did this Peaks Club. Of course, you've done Mount Marathon and the Ironmans and everything else. You're a pretty active individual, aren't you?
Well, you make me feel good, Robert. Thank you. No, yeah, I just love being part of things. You know, I think that I could probably be good at one thing if I focused on one thing, but I just like to try everything, so I'll just be one of those jack-of-all-trades, you know.
Of course. So, Casey, if you don't mind me asking, how old are your kids?
My kids are 5 and 7, so
five
kindergarten
and, seven.
And second grade. Yeah.
So how did your life change, so to speak, in terms of your activity level or being able to get out there and train? Now that the kids are growing up a little bit, because you said just a minute ago that you didn't have as much time as you had, of course, before you had kids. So did you find yourself switching to different types of activities or different types of sports? Or how did you find a way to include the kids in what you were trying to do?
Well, I always laugh when people ask about nap time or sleeping schedule, because my kids, they didn't ever sleep in their own little crib or bed. They took naps when, sometimes, you know, you're driving in the car, but they would take naps. But I would put them in the jogging stroller, and that was a great place for them to nap. And I would get a walk or a run for exercise. They slept in our raft when we'd be going down the river. I mean, that always put them to sleep. We took them, I guess, not just exercise, but activities. You know, we took them hunting when they were even as little as babies. I mean, obviously they weren't participating, but they were part of our family unit. And we really do stuff together. When we had children, we wanted to include them in everything. So some activities obviously take a lot more time and a lot more planning, but doing it with our children is just so much more fulfilling than we ever thought it would be. And I know that you experienced that, obviously, you talked about your mushing and including the kids and all the chores and activities, and now your kids are mushers, so.
Right, and you know, our kids, I believe I said this a few episodes ago, we started them when they were very young. Our youngest was 2.5, 3 years old at the time, Nicole, and she was the one that went off to run junior Iditarod a couple of times. Our middle son, Tyler, he was always in that age where he was a little too young or a little too old, if you know what I mean, for things that were, you know, he was a little too old to do the 100-yard dash, one dog sprint, but he's a little too young to go out on the trail by himself. So he kind of missed out on a lot of the racing, and that's sort of unfortunate, but he still was highly involved with us in our daily activities. But you know what I found so inspiring, Casey, is when both of those guys graduated from Houston High School, both of them said, you know, when you get up, they thanked, you know, mom and dad for everything that they taught them about life through mushing. And I think that that's an amazing thing. You know, most people get up there and, you know, talk about going to college and moving out and that sort of thing. But our kids really embraced the lifestyle, and it became sort of a talking point, I guess, or a motivating factor of their whole lives. And I think that's the important thing to teach our kids.
Well, exactly. And then I know we've talked before, but, you know, when you go through hard times in your life, which everyone will, and you can draw back on certain experiences that gave you strength or motivated you, inspired you, and then you can apply those to what you're going through to hopefully get you through those hard times. So I think that's very important.
Oh, no, I was saying I just totally agree with that.
Yeah, and you know, getting your kids involved in all the things. I mean, it can be a fun experience. Sometimes you're like, I'm trying to do this new fitness blender. I don't know if you've ever heard of fitness blender, but I found it the other day. It's on YouTube. It's free. You just type in fitness blender, and there are so many little quick activities, little workouts, fit in a 10-minute ab workout, or they have longer ones too. But you know, I'm just doing them right on my living room floor, right? And then before I know it, my kids are right there, and I'm like, wait, your leg's on me. I'm trying to do this sit up and this and that. But you know what? They're doing it with me, and they're excited, and they see mom doing something healthy. So again, that just modeling that behavior, I want to instill in them to eat healthy and work out and have good physical fitness.
I totally agree with that. You know, there's just so much information out there. It can almost become overloading about what is available, whether it's on, you know, social media or on TV or on YouTube, whatever. And I think that would be a good topic for another show is how to get the right type of exercise in the environment you live, because we live in an area where the outdoors are abound, but our indoor activities, a lot of times you have to travel quite a ways to. I know I mentioned when we talked about swimming for triathlon training, I have to drive almost an hour each way to get to the pool, and that can be burdensome sometimes. You know, it takes you an hour to get there, an hour to get back, and if you're in the pool for an hour, it's a half a day to do an activity, and that's sometimes difficult. So I think that's a good show to talk about for folks that are training for sports up here in Alaska. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think that's great, and learning ways to get other activities that will help you build those muscles for maybe there's other ways to get muscles for swimming, you know, when you can't swim. So that's a great topic. And hey, I'll say this.
Yes.
Oh, before I forget, because I know we were mentioning Be Alive and talking about, you know, Be Alive just on our Facebook page, which I actually just went in and changed the username so it's easier for people to find it. So if they get on Facebook, you can just type in Go Be Alive. So just type in the phrase
Go
Be Alive, and it'll pop up, and you'll see the little green and white icon there, and that'll take you to the page. But, you know, on that page, that's what we just want to inspire. So we want to post things that are inspiring. And I need to put on stories more about people who have been through illnesses and are coming back and being alive. And, you know, that's the kind of thing. Sometimes you see people and you're inspired by them. So you say, hey, they can do it. I can do it. And that's what we're trying to do.
Right. Well, let's jump into that topic a little bit. We have about 7 minutes left, and I have a little bit of a personal question in regards to that. I know you've shared your story about overcoming cancer and the difficulties of going through that were. My question to you in regards to our Be Alive topic is, did you, during your treatment times or during those really difficult times, did you find any motivation out there to get out there and exercise when you were feeling up to it? And if so, what was that?
Oh, yeah. And that was a big theme for me going through all the treatment. Prior to that, I had trained hard and done some races and got myself into a good fitness level, probably the best fitness I'd ever been in. And that helped me because obviously your body goes through a lot of crazy stuff, and it was changing fast. But I think that gave me a great base to fight even harder. And then while I would always get out, you know, get outside if I could, go for short hikes. I mean, it just felt good. I always felt better. And then when I was going through my stem cell transplant down at MD Anderson in Houston, Texas, they actually have a program within the hospital where you would do laps. You go out and you're connected to all, you know, your IV, your pole with all your chemo, and you're doing laps around the hospital floor, and you would record your laps and you would get something called M&Ms, and they were just a little circle and it would post on your door. And then you could actually win. This sounds kind of funny, having a competition during chemo, but you could be the, I don't know what it was called, but the winner for the week of how many laps you got. So I won a couple times, got my little door decorated, and it was a fun thing to strive to do that exercise. But as I was walking the halls, I could see all the buildings of Houston, which looks a lot different than Alaska. But I would imagine that those buildings were mountains, and I would imagine that I was hiking through the mountains, and I was getting stronger, and that, you know, I was going to be back in the mountains. And, you know, using that imagery and using that for motivation, that was very important to me, and it kept me going.
Well, last question in regards to that. I know you're a very inspiring person today, now that you have worked your way through all of that. Did you find yourself struggling to be inspiring then, or were you just concentrating on yourself and making sure you were well? How did you deal with that?
You know, I feel like an extremely blessed person to be surrounded by family and friends and people who, you know, they weren't going to let me give up, you know, even if I wanted to, which I didn't. But it was amazing how people would be inspired by, I don't know, my attitude or just the fight towards what I was going through. But that inspired me right back. So the outpouring of love and support did nothing but, you know, continue to lift me up. So I feel very blessed in that. And if there's people out there who know someone who's going through cancer or any other, you know, terrible illness, you know, just anything you can say or do to just give them a little bit of hope, it goes a long way. It goes farther than you think.
Right. And, you know, on Facebook in particular, you see sort of the same responses is, you know, we're praying for you or you know, our thoughts are with you or whatever. But I think that there can be a lot more than that. Do you agree?
Yeah. And, you know, people would send me cards. You know, there was one lady in town. Oh, my gosh. She'd send me a card every week, never fail, you know, and you'd look forward to that and you'd get it. And we built an amazing friendship from that. But people who would see it on Facebook, someone maybe I hadn't heard from for years, but I worked with back in the day, you know, all of a sudden a package would show up for things for my kids. People sent us clothes because we were in Texas. We don't have warm weather clothes, you know, so all of a sudden we had clothes for our children. People would send books or little crafts for the kids to keep occupied, you know, just any little thing that someone's thinking about. Somebody sent us some canned salmon. What a treat. You know, we were missing everything in Alaska. And those things really just lifted us up a lot.
They do. And you know, it doesn't always have to be monetary. You know, some people are on very tight budgets and they don't have to, you know, give gifts to say their thanks. You know, back in, you know, it's sort of fallen out of line, I guess. But, you know, a lot of people don't give flowers anymore when people are in the hospital. They give other things, which is kind of unique. So I think any way that you can inspire people when they're down and whatever way they are down, whether they're sick or going through rough times or whatever, some people just need that that outside pick-me-up to help them out. And that can go a long way, can't it?
Right. And even emails and texts or, like I said, letters or cards. I had a friend who, she's a teacher in a school down in Oregon, and they, all of her students, they all made me pictures, and then they put them in a little, you know, just stapled them together, put them in a book and sent them up, that kind of stuff. It blows you away that someone would take the time to think about you and send something to make you smile. So don't ever, you know, underestimate just small little things that can help other people feel a lot better.
Excellent. So definitely check out Be Alive on Facebook. It is the green and white icon there. We have it right here on our show page. That's what you're looking at as you're listening to this today. You'll find that logo right there on the page, and that's the one you want to go to. Make sure you like the page and share your stories of inspiration and all that you have to offer. That's the important part of that. Casey, we have about 20 seconds. I have a show topic idea for you. Let's talk about the Mount Marathon next time. I would like to know everything that I could possibly learn about that, because that's a really unique Alaska event. And I know you've ran it many times.
Awesome.
Yes,
I've done
to
it
know
eight times.
Eight times. I would like to know what it's about, how you sign up, all of that. How's that?
That sounds great, and it's perfect timing, Robert, because it starts, sign up for it starts on January 1st. So we're, if people are out there thinking about it, this is a good time to say, hey, you got to get ready to sign up.
Excellent. All right, Casey, we will talk to you next week, 10 o'clock Alaska time. We'll make sure we share the links and all that over on the Be Alive page, and get out there and be alive. How about it?
All right. Have a great week, Robert.
Thank you. On behalf of my co-host, Casey Randall, this is Robert Forto for Try Alive. We'll see you guys next time. Goodbye.